Fortify Niche.
Let's start with the basics. Could you introduce us to our humble listener?
Yeah, of course. So I'm the creator of Forbidden Psalm. Will Roman Daltrey. I kind of created the game nearly 3 years ago now. And since then have created a couple of spin-off titles as well. And I've been working on kind of creating miniature skirmish games and role-playing games and things for about 3 years now. So it's kind of taken off in a weird way.
And for us, it has taken off in a pleasing way. We just found out that Forbidden Psalm was like the third game we covered on the podcast. So that it has been a long road since then.
Yeah, I saw that. When you reached out, I kind of looked back and saw that you'd covered Forbidden Psalm. And I did listen to the podcast. You guys were very kind about the game. So it's kind of a while ago now, both for yourselves and for myself. Yeah, that feels almost like ancient history that I wrote that, even though it was only 3 years ago.
Yeah, hopefully all of us just keep getting better. But to take us even further back, so how did you start with the whole wargaming thing in the first place?
Yeah, so I've been playing role-playing games for 20 years, since I was like 15.
Yeah.
And I got into wargaming a lot later, probably only about 6 years ago. And what I found that there was kind of a lack of games that had real narrative in it. So even games that claimed to be quite narrative, they were still quite competitive games. And I found, and maybe it was just the groups I was playing in, that they were playing very competitive games. And I enjoyed those games, and they were fun. But because I'd come from a role-playing background, I was much more about that kind of telling a story on the tabletop. And kind of started playing a game called Infinity, which I love the game Infinity, but it is an incredibly competitive game.
Yeah, yeah. we're also fans of the game, and we also aware how competitive it is.
Yeah, and it doesn't always lead itself to the most narrative thing.
No.
And then that led me to... Well, lockdown happened in COVID, and in the UK, our lockdown was pretty severe. And I just started reading the Morkborg role-playing game and really loved that setting and decided, and they have this open license that anyone can create anything for. And I decided I was going to write my own kind of rule set for skirmish games, more to keep me sane during lockdown than anything else. And while working on it, a thing called Zine Quest on Kickstarter was happening, where people put up little projects and you get a little bit of money. And I thought, you know what, let's throw it in and see if it gets anything. And maybe it'll pay that I can pay some artists to put some art to this thing. Not really thinking of it as anything major. And it kind of just spiraled from there. The Kickstarter was more successful than I was expecting. And then it got picked up by a publisher. And then, it has spiraled from there. And now... I think at the last count, it sold 10,000 copies or something like that. And it's kind of exploded, really, from what was essentially just a dumb idea I had to stop myself going mad.
Turns out it was a very good idea that prevented you from going mad and suddenly catapulted you into a game designer.
Yeah, which is weird. I still kind of, when people ask what I do for a living, because I have a day job, but then I also, this has kind of taken over in a way. And kind of explain to people that I'm a game designer as well, as the day job is a bit odd still. Still kind of came to terms with that.
If I may inquire, what is the day job?
Yeah, so I work in for climate change charities and on policy. So... it's completely unrelated to why I write games about the world ending all the time. I work in policy for a variety of climate change charities in the UK, and that's the day job. So very policy focused, reading up on the current science of climate change and doing work around kind of different bits of policy. And then by night, I write completely insane games. That are mostly just things that make me laugh.
So is this how you went from making a Mork Borky game for a mad fantasy adventure and branched out into cyberpunk and World War One horrors and with Dreadful Nights into Victorian Monster Hunter?
A little bit, yeah. And some of that was kind of just what ideas took me or what kind of things was inspiring me at the time. So the cyberpunk one kind of came off the back of Cyborg, which
yeah.
is a cyberpunk version of Morkborg, and kind of it felt natural to do a game based on that setting. Last War just happened to be, I think I'd been reading a lot about World War One at the time, and that influenced me wanting to make something a bit more horror themed, kind of. And then weirdly, while I was writing that, when obviously the Ukrainian war kicked off, and kind of there was part of me that didn't release Last War because making a game about war during a war that's very close to home just felt a bit odd, but kind of
yeah.
There's some people about it and they all convinced me to carry on. And then, yeah, Last War was kind of just inspired by the things I was consuming at the time. And then very much the same with Dread Knights. I think I had a month period where I was reading things like Edgar Allan Poe and reread Dracula. And that very much inspired me to create Dread Knights. So, yeah, it's usually like if you can see my reading list, wait like 6 months after I finish a book and then I'll probably make a game based on it. So I'm quite a simple person.
I mean, that is understandable. I also sometimes feel like creatively impacted by the last thing I've read or watched. It's just that I don't carry it on through into a wonderfully illustrated the book of miniature wargaming.
Yeah, to be honest, I've been so lucky with the artists I get to work with. So some of the art is mine, and then I've also, from the community, have come across some just absolutely amazing artists that I get to work with. Dread Knights, the vampire art and the werewolf art by Vil is some of my favorite art that I've ever commissioned, and I'm really excited actually because I'm working with them on a future book.
Yeah,
artist, so which is quite exciting.
Yeah, those were the two standout illustrations: the creepy elongated vampire and the werewolf, and it brought an even more cohesive theme to the book than in Forbidden Psalm, in as much as I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dread Knights, it was nice because it was kind of trying to break a little bit out of that for Morkborg mold. So Morkborg, very punky, very zine, kind of, you know, you throw all the design elements at a thing. But then and that's really, I love that aesthetic. But then for Dread Knights, it was quite fun to be able to get away from that and just kind of focus it down into a more cohesive design. And think about, you know, gothic horror, so just picking three colors. So throughout the book, the only colors obviously are black, white, and red. Only, you know, limiting the number of font uses, and just having a more cohesive design, I think, led to a kind of a better looking book in a way. So yeah, that was definitely, and kind of taking that design philosophy forward into some future work. So like I said, one of the future books that I'm working on, I'm only going to have Vil as the artist. So there'll just be one cohesive art style throughout. Which I think hopefully will kind of create a really interesting product. And because they are such an amazing artist that do these just fantastic spreads, really, you know, I literally asked them, draw me a vampire. And then they drew the art in Dread Knights, which is just this fantastic spread with so many little details hidden in it. So quite excited to work with them again on future projects.
Yeah. It's really fun that you each discovered each other through this work. What was in general the response of the audiences like? Did it surprise you in any way outside of the whole, this is my another, now I have another job, another thing to call myself?
Yeah, just the kind of how positive people have been about the game. And like I said, I really, when I first made Forbidden Psalm, I made a game that I wanted to play. And a lot of the humor in it and kind of the content in it is just things that made me giggle or things that I wanted to see in a game. And kind of a big push in terms of the game design was I wanted a game that was fun to lose, because so many games are so punishing when you start losing. Like, I really enjoy Necromunda, but Necromunda is a game where, the minute your crew starts to lose, it spirals. And you suddenly find that if you're playing a campaign, you kind of don't want to continue because you feel so far behind other people's crews. And it's the same in a lot of game design. And I wanted a game where it was like, you're not really punished for losing. And when people die, it's kind of just funny and you get new people. And that was a lot of the design philosophy. And then seeing people pick up on that and have that same enjoyment and get the same enjoyment from things that I was hoping people would. So we have a Discord channel for Forbidden Psalm, and there's one channel on it which is all people putting stories of when their guys die. And people are just having a good fun and a laugh about their characters that snuffed it in interesting ways. And that's kind of, yeah, the thing that surprised me the most is seeing people kind of pick up or respond to things I was hoping they would. That's just like brings a lot of joy to myself. And then, yeah, people kind of that have stuck with the games and with each game that's come out, kind of building this community and different people being excited for different projects. And that's kind of the goal now with Forbidden Psalm, is to have different settings across the thing. So people might not play all the games, but they can pick the one that appeals to them the most. So for some, you know, historical-esque Last War type setting is what appeals to them. For others, Dreadnought or Cyberpunk. And that's kind of the goal going forward, is to have lots of different settings and kind of people can then pick and choose which one they want to play. Yeah, and I think seeing how people have reacted to that has been just been really amazing. And yeah, I'm still kind of blown away how many people have played or and purchased my games and the positive comments I get. And yeah, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I imagine it must be great. We're happy whenever we get a single positive comment on Twitter. I think you mentioned something that ties into another question, the whole thing about making losing fun or not bad, at least, because, well, when you think about Morgborg and I guess the wider OSR niche, I guess it's focused on the lethality, and the players are often, not always, are told to suck it up, to tough it out. Meanwhile, Dread Knights, while it, like we said on the podcast, it looks lethal on the surface, and that like your guy can permadie on the, right there on the table and very easily. You've put in a lot of options to cushion that, to make the deaths not stick up to and including to making guys immortal. What made you iterate more on that idea from what we saw in Psalm and up to the all these options in Dread Knights?
Some of it is less of a conscious decision to make the games less lethal, or it's more just kind of as I write and add elements and how they all kind of come together. So I have like my design process. I kind of create the game and I create the structure. I kind of think about what I want the theme of the game to be, and then I build around that. And then you add these elements together, and then you look at the package at the end and you say, okay, is this where I want it to be? And with Dread Knights, definitely it kind of tones back some of the lethality that some of the other games had. And I think that kind of fits in that kind of gothic horror-esque world in which you can become a vampire, you can become a werewolf. So it's less about the death and more about the curse that you get and then how you overcome that curse and the story and the narrative that builds from that. And I think it was also that thing of having then that variance in, not difficulty, but kind of, yeah, lethality, I guess, in terms of the games that I've created. So there are different ones. So if you want to play a really brutal game in which, you know, your guys can die very, very easily, then Last War is probably the one where people die the most and the most characters kind of be at risk. Whereas then Dread Knight, there's a lot of options for players as well. And I think some of it is I don't want to just have a reskin each time of the game, because that feels a bit cheap. That, you know, I'm just saying to people, hey, pay this much money for another book that has basically some new scenarios, and otherwise it's the exact same game each time. You know, I do want the games to feel very different. I do want there to be different content, so each game has different elements. So Kill Sample Process, a Cyberpunk game, has a whole wanted level mechanic and cyber mods and things, and Dread Knights, then there's this whole concept of getting these infections that you then have to like figure out how to cure, and you work for a guild, and you know there's a lot of different elements to it than previous games, and that's going to be the same going forward. Each game will have kind of significant differences in that sense. So the core rules are there; they work. They're very simple. They're there so you can play the game, and then bolting on these animal elements then really that kind of give each game its distinct feel and approach. And some of those elements make a game more lethal, some of them make them less lethal and give you different options.
So there's a bit of accidental genius at work there.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, sometimes I just write things because they seem like a good idea at the time. And then you see how they all the puzzle pieces fit together at the end. And you go, oh, I've unintentionally made a good thing. it's definitely an element of that.
I imagine that is a very good feeling. Talking about intentional stuff, have you developed a work process yet? Like, how do you go about creating a new game outside of reading a book that captures your attention?
Yeah, so I kind of usually it starts as kind of like a spark of inspiration from somewhere, whether that's Last War really came from a conversation with members of the community, because that was the kind of first really rip on Forbidden Psalm. And that came from the Discord chat with a couple of people, and they were talking about where Forbidden Psalm could go in terms of setting, and there was lots of different settings thrown around, and that's the one that kind of sparked my imagination. And then I sat down and kind of wrote out the setting. So again, being a very narrative kind of focused person, I always kind of think of the setting first and what the story I want to tell is, and then the kind of the structure of the story I want to create for players to play in. And then I kind of come from there and think about, okay, well, what would this setting have in terms of features and feats and things like that? So with Dread Knights, I kind of sat down and was really thinking about what does a, you know, Victorian-esque, turn-of-the-century city look like with horrors that awaken in the night, and how do the citizens of that city deal with it? So they pay these guilds, or the guilds go out and try and clean up the streets of all these horrors. And the rich, you know, hide away in their mansions. And that kind of then led to, okay, well, what does this game need? Okay, well, it needs a guild mechanic because you're going to work for different guilds. Okay, then what else does it need? All right, well, it needs infections because infections are, you know, an element of if you get bitten by a vampire werewolf, how does that... Is your character just lost forever? Or is there a mechanic where the infection actually plays out? So those kind of things then come into it. And then I have this, like I said, design doc where I put these ideas in and start working through them. And then I play test the games as I'm working through, make sure that things actually work as intended. and that, you know, something I've written isn't completely insane. And then I get a draft together, usually share that, get people to sign up for a playtest doc, send the playtest doc out, get feedback, make some changes based on the feedback I get, and then usually go out. With Dread Knights, it was the first book we went straight to print with, which was a different type of experiment because previously we've kickstarted everything. And that was quite nice to just be able to say to people, here's the book. You know, you don't have to wait 6 months for printing and shipping and everything. It's just, if you want it, it's there. And then like immediately getting positive feedback from people who picked up the book was really, really quite exciting.
That seems to be a fun experience. Of course, I guess that means also having the funds to go immediately to shipping, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And been really lucky working with a new publisher, kind of based on the success of the previous books, they could really see, yeah, this is going to sell. It's worth putting the money behind the game and getting a bunch of books printed up and then getting them out to people. So, yeah, we've at this point got an audience that are interested in things I create for some reason, and it means it's really great to be able to just like a publisher to be able to just put a bunch of money behind printing a bunch of books and taking that risk on a project. And that's not to say we won't use Kickstarter in the future for other projects. We definitely will, but we're going to be selective about that, just because Kickstarter is a bit of a nightmare to run.
I can only imagine.
Yeah,
but all of this time when you're creating your own games and achieving success in the I love to call it industry and the market, do you at the same time follow other game creators? Do you like get inspired by their works?
Yeah, totally. So kind of been involved in the 28 community, 28 magazine. In fact, actually helped do some of the design work on the last magazine. The kind of, I think he's the chief, I want to say editor, Alex, we're actually co-creating a game together at the moment.
Ooh.
which is quite exciting. So it's called Childhood. It's basically a child-friendly version of Forbidden Psalm. And I say child-friendly in inverted commas because we started off with it being very child-friendly, but we've since added a bunch of things where, you know, maybe it's a PG-12 now.
Yes, maybe you made it interesting to teens.
Yeah. So definitely follow some of the kind of people involved in that space. So the Turnip guys and some of those games. Necropolis is another one. So definitely follow other indie games. Played a bunch of things like Frostgrave, which is kind of one of the bigger indies out there, and really enjoyed that. So yeah, definitely follow other people and play other games, and kind of try and follow as many of the indies and play as many of the indie games as I can. Particularly, you know, mentioning no names, but the big boys out there don't always make the best games. Often the more
shocking.
Yeah, most of the creative stuff is coming from the indie scene. So definitely try and follow as many of the indie creators as I can, and just even if it's not playing the games, I have a kind of habit of buying rule sets just to read them and kind of see what other people are doing and see what's good. And so I've got a bunch of game books next to me that I've bought that I haven't even played.
I'm sure that has nothing to do with your background as an RPG player.
Yeah, it definitely does. And then also playing a lot of role-playing games and seeing kind of what elements I want to bring it over from those as well. Just because I do really like bringing that role-playing element into the miniature games that I both play and create. I'm the guy at the table that, you know, is making gunshot noises and laser sounds while playing.
having access to other design spaces and not just swimming in the same pool of, I don't know, game ideas seems to be good. Like, we've praised Brett Spivey for his use of Powered by the Apocalypse engine, where it's NPCs don't even roll and stuff happens on your bad rolls. This is the best I can describe it. I mean, you've probably played the game, you know it.
Yep, I know it. Yep.
So I think you mentioned Necropolis or something. Like, so what upcoming indie games are you looking forward to?
Upcoming ones. So definitely Necropolis. Because that's kind of still in its design phase, is one that I'm really interested in. Kind of always interested in what Ash of Griller Miniature Games puts out, because he's put a couple of games out that have been really exciting. He has a mech game and a zombie game that I kind of have out of both of those, and really interesting games. I'm really interested in the next game from the guys from Infinity. They're doing War Cry, something like that's called, which is it's a fantasy version of Infinity, which I'm really interested to see how that plays, just because I think Infinity has, in terms of game mechanics, some of the best game mechanics of any miniatures game I've played. So really excited to see what they do. It feels weird calling them an indie, but obviously everyone compared to Games Workshop are really indie. I think those are the games that I'm probably most looking forward to in the next year or so.
Yeah, those are good ideas to be tracking. I guess we'll be tracking your future project with teen-friendly child game. Any other ideas we should be looking forward to, or should we just follow your account on Goodreads and then guess what's coming out next?
Yeah, no, I'm happy to talk about it. I'm usually quite open, probably more open than I should be. I don't know, my publisher's probably mad at me, but I tend to just say whatever the hell I'm working on. So I'm a bit of a project butterfly. I jump between projects. It's how I keep myself interested in this stuff. So at the moment, I'm working on the Childhood game. That's probably the next game to come out. We've got a second edition of Forbidden Psalm about to land. So what we've done there is we've taken the first book and the expansion Mad Wizard, which was another 100-page expansion, which added, I think, 17 new scenarios and bunch of extra content, and we've mashed them into one book. So it's a book with 26 scenarios. All of the like extra content from the expansion is in that core book now. We've clarified a bunch of rules, because when I made the first game, you know, you kind of make a game, you put it out, and you don't really think about certain things. So some of the best questions I've had was one person saying, so in the game you can buy a backpack, and the backpack gives you an extra equipment slot. And there was no rule that said you couldn't have multiple backpacks. Someone was like, can I have infinite backpacks? And it was like, my response then was yes, but only if you model it on the model. but so just adding some clarity to the rules to kind of answer some of the most asked questions, really. And then all new art. So we've gone out and we've worked with a bunch of art, including Vil. Vil's done an amazing art of the Siren. And we've also got some other artists coming in. We've pulled in some of the art from the pre-existing books where it was art we really loved, but we've also gone out and got some new artists on board as well. So I think in total, there's something like 15 new creature designs and things, and a lot more narrative put in as well. So the whole thing sits at around 180 pages. And that is literally with the editors at the moment doing their proofreading, and then that'll be coming to print. There's also going to be a French version coming out at the same time, which is really exciting. And so that's one project. and then another project probably coming towards the end of the year is a kind of it's a Lovecraftian inspired without being Lovecraft book. So
that's always good.
Yeah, so I've recently been reading a lot of role-playing games around Cthulhu and Lovecraft, and every single one of them starts with a paragraph explaining how they're inspired by Lovecraft, but he was a massive racist. So what I wanted to do is kind of look at the wider cosmic horror genre and pull inspiration from other people other than Lovecraft. So it's a book that doesn't mention Lovecraft once, it doesn't have any reference to him, but it's very cosmic horror. So the core idea in the game, and like I said, with each Forbidden Psalm game, I try to create a new element. This is the kind of new element of this game, is you are a cult trying to bring about the end of the world. And the first thing you do in the game is you create the endless horror that you're working for or you're trying to summon. And you do that by rolling on 3d100 tables. One gives the creature its name, like the first part of its name. You get the second part of its name, and then that gives your crew a specific power. And then you roll another one, which gives a specific way that you can do a ritual to summon your elder god. And what that means is there's a million different combinations of gods that you could have. So it's called the Endless Horrors Between the Stars. And the whole idea is that you're creating this endless horror for you to play. And then your cult is basically trying to summon it. You can also play investigators if you want to just try and stop the cult. And that's coming probably end of the year. And that's the book I'm working with Vil on. So what we did for the art for it is we rolled on those tables and I just gave those to Vil as prompts and said, draw me these. So Vil is currently drawing some absolutely insane drawings that are just amazing based on these prompts. So just to give like a sense of the prompts, you've got things like the horrifying space penguin that wants to consume the stars, the drowning malignancy that wants to spread ruin, or the drowning, the dead horror that wants to spread decay. So you've got tables that you roll on that give you these different elements to your horror's name. You're going to play as a cult across a number of scenarios where essentially you're performing rituals or trying to get artifacts to bring about the end of the world. That's another thing I'm working on. That'll probably be the end of this year. We've also got Morkball, the print version, coming out. So it's been as a PDF for a while because we put it out as a living game, which is essentially your Blood Bowl-esque kind of game, very different in mechanics. Set in the Forbidden Psalm world, so set in Morkborg world. We did a Kickstarter last year just for the digital version. We got the print version coming because it was a living game. We wanted to get a lot of feedback on it. People gave us a lot of feedback, and now we're going to put the print version out sometime soon as well. So that's this year. And then going into next year, there's a bunch of other projects planned that are kind of in their design doc phase, from pirate-based version of Forbidden Psalm, zombies, working on a different game entirely called Project Mara, which is using the Mothership role-playing game as its core and actually turning that into a delicious game. So that's a bit of a longer-term project because it's one where I'm actually creating a whole new like system of mechanics and I'm really playtesting them to death to make sure that they work as smoothly as Forbidden Psalm does because I don't want to put something out that I'm not happy with. That's probably going to be a later this year, next year project. It's one I've been working on for about a year and a half. Lots of new projects coming and quite excited for a lot of them.
I'm just happy to hear words editors and playtesting. But I have a whole thing going in this podcast about those aspects of it. So as you work and continue to work on like 5 different projects at the same time on my last counting, do you have time for relaxing? Do you play? Do you still play miniatures? Do you get to infinity? Have you formed opinions on the reinforcements mechanics and so forth?
Yeah. So I do still play. I've actually kind of bounced off of Infinity recently. Not because I don't love the game. I really do. I think it's a game, unfortunately, that creates such a competitive nature to play that kind of just where I'm at gaming at the moment, it's appealing to me a lot less. The tournament scene around it can be quite intense. I've not had as much desire to play tournaments in the last kind of year or so. So kind of moved more over to more narrative games. So I've actually been playing some games that I don't think are the best games by a long shot, but lean more into narrative. So things like Necromunda I've played a little bit of recently. Been playing some 30K, which is a terribly written game.
Naturally, yeah, we know that.
The rule books are laid out in the worst ways possible. Reading through them, I'm just like, how did anyone make these decisions? Your rules for when you play, you need 2 books, and one of them has a glossary, the other one doesn't have a glossary. Some of the rules for your army are in one book and not the other, and then in the other and not the other. It's just a mess. But the people I play with play very narratively, so it's a game I can very much kind of lose myself in. And what I've decided that game is basically not to bother learning the rules and just let my opponent tell me what I do. so I'm just there to have fun and narrative. So I've been playing that as well. And yeah, and lots of plans to play some more Frostgrave in the future. So that's a game I really, really love. I will get back to Infinity eventually. So I've checked out the reinforcement mechanics. I think it's interesting. I'm not quite sure how I feel about it yet. I mean, they brought back the Cascuda, so like that.
Yeah.
That made me happy. A giant bug tag thing that jumps from the sky. But at the same time,
and explodes.
That feels quite fun and fluffy and a bit more narrative. I think, I think with Infinity, it's more I love the game, less enjoy playing it in tournaments and things. So I think if I can play it more narratively with local people, I would definitely play some more Infinity as well. And even played some 40K recently in 10th edition. And again, 10th edition is quite badly written.
Shock of all shocks.
I know I'm really ragging on Games Workshop here, but no, it's in a way it feels like they're trying to move the game away from the competitive scene. That you know they're caring less about competitive because there's less nuance to the game. You know, you don't have points for different equipment anymore and things like that. It feels a little bit more fluffy, and I quite like fluffy narrative games. So even though it's not the best written game in the world, having played a couple of games, I've had some fun with that as well. So yeah, just dabbling in a lot of different games, Blood Bowl, Frostgrave, Necromunda, all sorts of different things, and then some indie games as well. So I'm working with a team who are doing the French translation for Binsar, and they sent me a game called Mars Code Aura, which is a really interesting cyberpunk sci-fi-ish game that I'm definitely gonna use my Infinity models for and try and get a couple of games of that in, because that looks really interesting.
Is it in French or is it available in English?
It is available in English. Well, at least the copies they sent me. so I do think you can get it in English. It's a super interesting game. The setting's really interesting. So you're on Mars and it seems like there's like a conflict that's broken out between two like colonies. And yeah, it's definitely an interesting one that I want to try out. I've read the rule book and that's about as far as I've got so far. So definitely more miniature gaming, and then a lot of role playing as well. That's the kind of main crux of a lot of my gaming at the moment, is running a couple of different role play games. So I'm running a Mothership game and a Call of Cthulhu game at the moment.
Mm-hmm. My co-host Casa, who couldn't join today, has bid me to ask you if you've ever played Carnival from. Have you ever played Carnival?
I've not. I read the rules. Really liked what I saw. Love the miniatures, the company behind it, I think do wonderful things. TT, I think they keep gaming really accessible and really affordable. I really love that they've expanded into paints and other things as well, and their terrain is, I own a bunch of their terrain, And I own a bunch of the Carnival minis because I bought them for Dreadnights. But I've not got round to playing the game yet. It's definitely one I'd love to check out at some point if I can find someone local who also wants to play. Definitely looks really interesting to me. Kind of like a more cohesive Malifaux in a way, in terms of just like aesthetics and things.
Yeah. seems you've done everything it's possible to do for Carnival except play the game.
Very much so. I've painted about 15 minis from it, and
oh my god, even painting miniatures, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, I paint like a few hundred minis a year. I'm weird like that. I'm one of those people that actually paints things I buy. I'm very odd.
No way, impossible. Painting miniatures, it will never catch on. How about the hobby community surrounding you? Do you just go to a friendly local game store, or do you play with friends, or have you shanghaied your children into playing miniature games?
Yeah, a bit of all three. So the local game store here is a place called Firestorm Games, which is huge. It's like a mecca for nerds in our area. It's in an old kind of car showroom, I think it was. And they have like 30 or 40 tables or something ridiculous like that. And it's always packed, so you can get a game of pretty much any game you want there. So kind of I'm involved in a couple of communities there. Then I have some friends that I play with, a couple of really good friends that, you know, come around mine, or we go to Firestorm and play. And then, yeah, definitely also brought my kids into playing as well. Me and the kids tend to play more board games than miniature games, but they're starting to get into the mini games a bit. They both enjoy painting them, for example. So definitely rope them in, and even rope them into Forbidden Psalm. People will have noticed that sometimes their art props up across the books.
We noticed.
Some might say it's child labor. I like to say it's including the family.
Speaking of miniatures and painting them, have you considered running a miniature line, especially since these days it seems to be fairly easy to find a friendly 3D designer to release at least STLs?
Yeah, so we've done some STL stuff for Forbidden Psalm before. So as part of Kickstarters that we've run, we've had Knucklebones Miniatures, which is a guy that Matt, who does 3D designs. He's done a lot of designs that people have used for Last War, for example. He's done a couple of designs for us. But in terms of like a whole line, we haven't gone down that route yet. I do also do some work with Bestiarium Minis. So Bestiarium Minis do some amazing 3D sculpts. And they've got a Patreon each month. And then each month you get a Forbidden Psalm supplement that I actually write for them. So it's like a two or three scenario little supplement you get. And basically they write a D&D module, and I just convert it into Forbidden Psalm each month. So if you're a fan of 3D printing, definitely check out Bestiarium Minis. If you join their Patreon, you also get Forbidden Psalm supplements. So I think there's a couple of kind of unofficial / official miniatures out there for the games. But it's definitely something I've thought a lot about, and kind of it would definitely be something I would pair up with somebody to do. I'm not a 3D sculptor. I'm definitely not in manufacturing. I would say unofficially, kind of the Frostgrave minis from North Star are kind of the ones that a lot of people use. And when I actually designed Forbidden Psalm, I had in mind that you get 5 minis on a sprue from them. So that's why your crew size is 5, because I've been asked that a few times, like, why is the crew size 5 minis? And it was because if you buy one sprue of Frostgrave minis from eBay, or buy it direct from the company, because they do them by the sprue, you get everything you need for a warband of Vinzam, and it was £6. So the idea was to keep the game accessible, keep it cheap. And so they're kind of, again, like unofficial minis that would recommend to people, but I would love to do a line of minis at some point. I think it's more just so many different projects going. So if someone's out there is a miniature creator and they want to reach out to me, please do. Like, be to work with everybody.
Believe me or not, I was considering asking a question about a 5-guy limit, but then I remembered that Majestic 13 and Verrothwood also did 5-guy, so I thought, like, maybe people decided that this is like a comfortable amount of skirmish miniatures to have on the table. But here you have a perfectly material-based answer.
Yeah, it was about keeping the game accessible for people, making it so that you're not sinking a lot of cost and resource into the game. That you can try it out for relatively cheap and see if you like it. It also means that if you buy a box of, you know, that come with 20 guys, when crew members die and you need to swap them out, you've got those options. So yeah, it just keeps that game kind of cheap and accessible for people to play. So many war games are, you know, hundreds of pounds investments before you even play, and then you play the game and work out you don't like it, and it's like, oh no. So
yes, I have a 30k army.
Yep. Yeah, I have a 30k army that was quite expensive, and like I said, I don't think it's the best game I've ever played. Probably the most expensive one, but maybe not the best.
So one last question personally from me before the final question from Casa. So who do you play in 30k?
So I've recently started playing Emperor's Children just because I wanted to paint a bunch of pink and purple. That was the entire motivation, was wanting to paint some more colourful models, because 30k can be quite a drab game in terms of painting. So definitely, yeah. So I play Emperor's Children, the prettiest boys in all of the 30k universe.
Funny, I started with Death Guard because I thought those would be the easiest to paint.
Yeah, I actually started with the Death Guard army because I really like weathering on vehicles.
And things.
But I find Death Guard to play incredibly boring, because they just kind of stand still and shoot, and that's really their thing. And they're just kind of unfun to play against because they just give other people penalties instead of having a lot of fun things. So kind of switched it up and gone for an army that is much more about melee and having some kind of fun rules around the like noise marine type elements. I can't remember their actual names.
Yes, and always being mad about the rules for Phoenix Terminators.
Yes.
Going on that, so how big is your Emperor's Children army?
So I think I've got it up to 3,000 points now, which is the full force you need. It's still in the middle of painting it.
Yeah.
Painting 100 purple boys is taking some time. I just finished painting a 40k Space Marine army for a friend. So kind of been painting a lot of Space Marines, and it's definitely feel like I might need a palate cleanser at some point.
Speaking of palette cleansers, the last question that Cass asked me to answer is, so will the wagon minigame will be making a return?
Will the which one, sorry?
Wagon
minigame. Yeah, that will. So it's not in the second edition of Forbidden Psalm, because what we're actually doing is we're going to also put out a collection of all the mini expansions I've done. So for Forbidden Psalm, there's something like 8 or 9 mini expansions, which are like 5 or 6 page mini things I did over the years, like Halloween expansions and things like that. They're all going into a book, and the wagon rules are going to go in that book. So we've got Forbidden Psalm core rules coming out, second edition. It's not really second edition, it's more kind of collated edition. Because we've not changed any of the rules. So that's one thing I'm dead against. If you've bought the first book and you've bought the expansion Mad Wizard, you do not need to buy the second book, which is, I know, weird from someone saying don't buy my thing, but you've got all the content. This is just new art and some clarification on the rules. We've not added any new content. And then the expansion book, again, if you've bought all the mini expansions, you don't need to buy the new book. It's just, instead of us having to keep 7 things in print, we're going to have 1 thing in print, which will be the collated edition of all those mini expansions, and the wagon rules are going to go in there as well. So you'll still have access to that mini kind of rule set, which, for those that don't know, there's a mini kind of scenario setting within the book where your crew kind of do a wagon race against other people's kind of a bit wacky racer style, where you can crash them and throw things at each other and yeah, stuff like that.
Yes, yeah, just classic Morka Borga fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was literally a game based on a really dumb idea where when we did the original Forbidden Psalm Kickstarter, one of the stretch goals, because obviously you've got Gorka Morka, it was kind of a rip on that. So we decided to do a racing game as a mini expansion, ripping on Gorka Morka because we've got the word Mork in there. So we felt like we had to. So yeah, a lot of the ideas are just usually because I've had a really dumb idea about play on words or. And then I have to flesh it out into a full game. Mork Ball was the exact same thing. It was just, you have this funny term, Mork Borg, which is the role-playing game, and then just calling it Mork Ball, and then setting a sports game in that universe. And then I had to go make one. So I made a dumb, I think it was an April Fool's joke originally, and then I had to go and actually make it.
I think if anything, this whole experience is making you very careful about doing jokes in the future.
You'd like to think that. That's not who I am. Yeah. So, but in a way, it's worked out because you know now there's a sports game called Mork Ball, which if you think Blood Bowl is a dumb game with silly rules, then you have no idea. Mork Ball is the dumbest thing I've ever written. It is incredibly silly. There's a whole mechanic in it where you have mascots, and if one of you guys get injured, your mascot can come on and play instead. One of the mascots is a goat, and if the goat ever gets the ball, it just eats it, and then the ball's gone. So that kind of gives you an indication of just how silly. There's a ref that you can kill. It's a very silly game that I made. So if people want to play literally, I think the tagline is the dumbest sports game in the universe or something. So if you want to play a really dumb game where you'll have a lot of laughs, but it's not competitive in the slightest, go play Mork Ball.
Go play Mork Ball before the goat eats the ball.
Absolutely, yes.
So on that high note, I think I'll finish today's interview. Would you like to now advertise something on air, as it say?
Yeah. If any of the games that we've talked about today interest you, you can check them out. Currently, Must Have Been Online is on Exalted Funeral. Dread Knights is being sold by a new publishing company called Space Penguin Inc. In future all the Forbidden Psalm games are going to be coming over to Space Penguin Inc. as well, so definitely sign up to the Space Penguin Inc. newsletter or come and join us on the Forbidden Psalm Discords. I think details for that are on my website, forbiddenpsalm.com, and that's where I also post all the current games. So if you want links to where you can get any of this stuff, any of the games, check out forbiddenpsalm.com.
Thank you for coming on to the show. It has been a blast. It's so always a blast to have a creator around and learn all the different ways you guys keep making the games that keep making us make podcast episodes. Just thank you for coming and best of luck in making more and more games.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. It's always great to talk to people who've reviewed the games and but both your review of the original game and Dread Knights were just glowing and just made me feel very smiley. So thanks for having me on and giving me a chance to have a chat.
Right. Thank you and goodbye.
Okay.